Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin DNR. Preventing food waste and composting scraps and uneaten veggies, grains, and fruit can help the environment. More dnr.wi.gov by searching food waste.
Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Think we can't wax philosophical about the 1999 movie Fight Club? Think again. Barry Vacker teaches media, cultural, and utopian theory at Temple University. He's also written a book called Slugging Nothing, Fighting the Future in Fight Club. Vacker gets philosophical with Steve Paulson.
Brad Pitt and Edward Norton play these two sort of urban terrorists who lead a gang of disaffected males in these battles and fights in basements and in cellar dwellings and things like that. And they sort of beat each other up, but it becomes a metaphor for a larger issue in our society, and that is sort of this issue not only of lost masculinity, but sort of a frustration with the modern world. And so they develop an organization called Project Mayhem, which becomes a terrorist group that in the end detonates skyscrapers in the hopes of sort of bringing civilization back to all zero. In fact, it was the skyscrapers of credit card companies in the novel.
And the thing that's kind of sobering in retrospect is the movie was made before 9/11, and there's the sense that there's something a little predictive about it.
Yes, the final scene in Fight Club with the skyscrapers kind of imploding downward, you can't help but look at those images and immediately think, wow, almost called the visual imagery of the Twin Towers collapsing in 2001.
There are a lot of quotes that have kind of become famous from this movie, and you mentioned several of them in your introduction to your book.
Yes.
Which kind of get at the, I guess what you could call the existential conditions of Fight Club. Tell me what some of these quotes are.
Well, I think the one that's very striking is the one that is simply 3 minutes.
3 minutes. This is it. Ground zero.
That statement is made by Tyler Durden, portrayed by Brad Pitt. And just the mere fact that the beginning of the film and the beginning of the novel, nearly at the very beginning, there's references to ground zero, and they're in a skyscraper. And that seemed to clearly foreshadow 9/11, even though in this case, the terrorists are more urban, I guess you'd call them urban guerrillas, urban terrorists. They're not necessarily fundamentalist terrorists or anything like that, but certainly very similar language, very similar frustrations, and very similar ideologies at play. And so I think that the idea of this sort of ground zero, and of course the ultimate ground zero goes back to Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and the idea of the center point of a detonation. And so I think in Fight Club, the ground zero means sort of a cultural detonation. It's not merely bringing down skyscrapers. The whole mission of Project Mayhem was to sort of bring civilization back to a pre-modern era, or actually, I guess you would say a hunter-gatherer era.
Well, one of the other quotes is, it's Project Mayhem that's going to save the world, a cultural ice age, a prematurely induced ice age. Which is,
yeah, it's very
evocative. Evocative idea.
Yeah, very evocative. And what I think is interesting about Fight Club is that it came out in 1999, and so did The Matrix. And whether you love or hate the films, and I'm neither a lover or hater of both, I'm trying to interpret them and make sense of them, they sort of captured a zeitgeist at that moment. If you recall, there was sort of the hysteria of the internet and the dot-coms, and the stock market was going up and up and up, yet at the same time there was this fear of Y2K and that the internet would collapse. Growing up in the 60s and 70s, for me, the year 2000 was always this symbol of some kind of future, that beyond 2000 there would be a future. It seemed so futuristic, those three zeros, right? That's why Stanley Kubrick had 2001: A Space Odyssey. In the year 2001, we would be in this new millennium. And I think that what has happened with the phrases like that, a prematurely induced ice age, that there's something happening where I think our technologies have propelled us into the new millennium. I don't think that can be denied. All the scientific discoveries, the proliferation of the internet, all the things that are happening. In fact, we're having an explosion of art and science all over the planet. Yet, I think those very things that are being revealed by science have generated a reversal, and much of our culture has not yet really entered the millennium. We haven't crossed over yet into that new era. And I think that's exhibited by a lot of the creationists, the fundamentalists, the desire to return to a simpler life or agrarian life, buy local, all those kinds of things, which would seem to me to at least putting a brake on certain notions of progress and trying to retreat backwards. And I think that in some sense, we've gone past the year 2000 with technology, but I think most of our ideologies haven't.
Well, and the Brad Pitt character, Tyler Durden, keeps pressing this message that we need to wake up. We need to liberate ourselves. And there's another quote, "With insomnia, nothing is real. Everything's far away. Everything's a copy of a copy.
Yeah, and when I read that line, I kept thinking that, you know, insomnia, you can't sleep. And actually, I have sometimes problems with sleeping. But I think about the internet, it never sleeps. It just keeps going. It's there. It's running. It's just like it's on autopilot. And yet we can summon up on our screen all these images. They're representations of something else that's not there. And I think that the writer and the screenwriter sense that we know we've got all these media images coming into our houses, and we have all these things we can access 24/7 all the time to keep us awake, keep us distracted, keep us entertained. And yet the reality is farther and farther away. And I think this is where it harkens to some of the writer Jean Baudrillard's ideas about what we're creating with our media world is copies of copies of copies, and that the real world or the authentic world or the untouched world is getting further and further away.
So that's part of the idea behind these underground fight clubs, for instance.
Exactly.
I mean, these guys who get together and basically they knock the hell out of each other. And it's not so much about winning, about beating the other guy, but there's something about trying to get in touch with your more primal self.
I agree with you completely, and I think it's a question of authenticity, that you become more authentic and more real when you participate in this brutal battles. And you're right, it doesn't really matter who wins. The goal is to participate and somehow get in touch with a lost masculinity, and I think even more importantly, a lost authenticity.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've called your book about Fight Club Slugging Nothing. And you talk a fair amount about, well, what you call nothings and zeros. How do these figure into this movie?
Well, one thing you got to have with a book is hopefully a sexy title. So I thought Slugging Nothing would kind of, you know, Slugging Nothing, what's that about? A playoff, obviously, Fight Club. But in reading the book and in also seeing the films, there were numerous references to nothings, zeros, emptinesses, voids, absences, lacks, and all kinds of things like that. And to me, it hearkened to the issues raised by the late existentialist philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre, who theorized that we're always confronting these voids or these lacks or these nothingnesses, and it's how we deal with them. In other words, we come into the world with no food and shelter, so there's a lack in the material world, so what do? We create civilization, agriculture, industrial, what we might call post-industrial now or postmodern. And so we also have a lack of knowledge, a lack of information. So there's an emptiness in our minds, an emptiness in our consciousness. So we invent language and art and books and computers and the internet. But there's a third void that's perhaps the most terrifying, and that's the future. And that's why humans have to have a plan. We have to have a model. We have to hurl ourselves into the future. There's no exit from tomorrow, right? There's no way we can get escape from that responsibility. And so in the novel, there's an underlying tension, an antipathy toward the future, a hostility toward, an anxiety about it. And at some points, it almost seems very paranoid about that something is looming out there that is unbearable, and we need to retreat away from it.
Well, and in the movie, there's a great scene early on where the Edward Norton character, who has this corporate job, and he's outfitted his whole apartment with products from IKEA, and there's sort of this great scene of, you know, the camera pans over everything that's been bought from IKEA.
Yeah, fabulous.
Like so many others, I had become a slave to the IKEA nesting instinct.
Yes, I'd like to order the Erica Picari dust ruffles.
If I saw something clever, like a little coffee table in the shape of a yin-yang, I had to have it. The Klipsk personal office unit, the Hovatrek home exerbike, or the Yohannishov sofa with the string green stripe pattern, even the Rizlampa wire lamps of environmentally friendly unbleached paper. I'd flip through catalogs and wonder, what kind of dining set defines me as a person? I had it all. Even the glass dishes with tiny bubbles and imperfections, proof that they were crafted by the honest, simple, hardworking indigenous peoples of wherever.
I was holding.
Your call is important.
So why does he seem to be in love with IKEA?
Well, I think it's interesting because I think he's in love with it, and then over time he comes to loathe it. And that's why he detonates his entire condo, right?
Right. He blows it up. He blows up his whole condo and, you know, destroys everything in it.
Exactly. But when you really think about it, if you might go back to the 1950s, and Frank Lloyd Wright might be a household name, the very famous architect, or Buckminster Fuller, or some of these famous architects. Today, there are very few architects who are household names who are designing homes. We have developers and things like that. So when people think of homes and styles for living, they think of IKEA, or Home Depot, or Martha Stewart. And I think that IKEA, because it's most of its designs are sort of, I guess, copies of very modern and very clean lines on their furniture, for most people, that's probably as close as they're going to get to modern architecture, or modern design, or modernist sensibilities. And you can contrast that with the sort of domestic conservatism of Martha Stewart, or the DIY Home Depot authentic home building kind of thing. And so you have these sort of three models for what the residence should be. You could have the IKEA version, the Martha Stewart, or the Home Depot. And the one that's most clearly identified with modern is IKEA. So I think that he's wrestling with modernism in that very struggle over IKEA versus whatever else he could think of.
Well, we should give a taste of this sort of unusual sense of the future as told by Tyler Durden. And I think it would actually be useful to maybe read a passage from the book by Chuck Palahniuk. And you have a passage in your book. Could you read that?
This is from the novel. You'll hunt elk through the damp canyon forest
around the ruins of Rockefeller Center. You'll wear leather clothes that will last you the rest of your life. You'll climb the wrist-thick cuts of vines that wrap the Sears Tower. And when you look down, you'll see tiny figures pounding corn, laying strips of venison in the empty carpool lane of some abandoned superhighway.
This was the goal of Project Mayhem, Tyler said, the complete and utter destruction of civilization.
What's interesting is, at the surface level, Fight Club is, it's a pretty exciting movie. I mean, it kind of gets your adrenaline rushing.
And,
some people are totally turned off by it. I mean, it's just, it's violent. People are knocking each other senseless and they're blowing up stuff. But you're also saying at this deeper level, it's a very philosophical movie. I mean, it raises profound questions about our lives, about what reality is all about.
It is very philosophical, and it resonates with today's youth at a variety of levels. And it still resonates. I'm not sure if it resonates exactly in the same way as it did in 1999, but it still resonates, and students are very intrigued by the discussions of it, what it means, what it's saying. For the most part, they're open to these larger stories or these larger ideas embedded within Fight Club, because I think they sense that it's saying something about their world, the urban metropolis where the majority of the world's citizens live, the majority of Americans live, and it's saying something about that lifestyle with all the advertising around us and all the furniture and all the rampant consumerism that we have. It's asking us to question that.
Barry Vacker is the author of Slugging Nothing, Fighting the Future in Fight Club. He spoke with Steve Paulson. Vacker is also the founder of the Center for Media and Destiny. You can find a link to the center's website on our website, ttbook.org.